Journalist Jad Sliman of National Public Radio interviewed risk communication expert Peter M. Sandman on March 8, 2021, on public health messaging that aims to persuade the audience at the expense of truth, some examples from COVID-19 and earlier. This is Segment 4, Gilding the Lily, Pre-COVID Examples. For the other segments, the complete hour and 45-minute interview, or other content on risk communication, go to www.psandman.com.
I actually want to kind of go through the pandemic just from your perspective, but one thing I forgot to kind of ask is, so even before this H1N, even before the speech in 2009, you had kind of come around to this idea that that public health or the good guys doesn't trust the public, and they should if they want to be trusted. Was there something, like, how did you kind of get to that position? Was this like gradual realization that on your part that public health doesn't trust the public and it's a problem?
It was example after example in my life experience that public health doesn't trust the public. And so much so that it willingly, willfully, consciously misleads the public in order to get people to do the healthy thing. And you know, one of the earliest examples, and I think I mentioned this example in the 2009 speech one of the earliest examples was, you know, I was on the board of the New Jersey Cancer Society, the New Jersey chapter of the American Cancer Society. And one of the things that, you know, the Cancer Society endlessly says is corporations ought to do anti-smoking programs because smoking, your employees smoke, they get lung cancer, and that costs you a lot of money. So we would argue that it's in the self-interest of corporations to teach employees not to smoke, to help employees quit smoking. And that was, and I believe remains, a core argument of the Cancer Society as it tries to persuade corporations to run anti-smoking programs. And the Cancer Society commissioned a study to prove that. And instead of proving it, the study disproved it. And it just turns out that smokers die in what is economically an optimal time. That is, they live out their employed life, but they spend way less time on medical insurance than they would if they weren't smokers. And so from an employee's economic point of view, employing smokers in this study turned out to be cost effective. And helping smokers quit smoking turned out to be a way of increasing the health insurance costs you're going to pay for your retirees. Are you with me? You understand the point?
Yeah, it's pretty grim.
It's grim. But, you know, but what we learned is that, you know, I mean, it wasn't like we were going to stop urging people to quit smoking because we want people to live as long as possible. But we should have stopped telling corporations that it was in their self-interest because we had learned that it wasn't. And we didn't. You know, that was a good argument. It raised a lot of money for anti-smoking programs. So we continued to lie to corporations in order to get more money for more anti-smoking programs that would save more lives, that would cost corporations more money.
Now, this example, though, seems kind of harmless. And I guess this gets at, like, the central question of, like, I mean, does the other shoe ever drop with this kind of stuff? Like, is there any example in your history that, like, seem to backfire in even a big or small way?
Yeah, I mean, you're right about the issue. I'm going to give you an example, but or as many examples as you can tolerate. But let me make sure I sort of outline the theoretical issue first. Sometimes it's clear to me that public health people are misleading the public foolishly because the truth is a good enough story And they're risking loss of reputation. They're risking people smelling a rat. They're risking the other side, if there is another side, exposing their dishonesty for no reason. That's why the phrase gilding the lily is one I tend to use a lot, because they've got a sound argument and they pretend it's sounder than it is. So the case for getting vaccinated is incredibly strong, and they lie about it anyway and disappear the tiny percentage of the argument that would suggest that there's anything wrong with getting vaccinated. So those are the most obvious cases where, and that's the most obvious example of not trusting the public, where, if you trusted the public, the evidence says the public is going to understand that the case you're making without gilding the lily is a strong enough case, and you're going to get every bit as much of the health behavior you want as you're getting by being dishonest. That's the easy one. Okay, and there are lots of examples of that, there are lots of examples of that out of the pandemic right now, and there are lots of historical examples.
Your MMR vaccine example kind of blew my mind, because it's such a, I don't know. You have to kind of twist your mind into knots to really figure out the right move there.
Well, and the MMR example is not the easy one. The MMR example is one where, if you tell parents the truth, and just, to get it onto your tape, the essence of the MMR example is, the measles is way more dangerous than the MMR if you catch it, but there's very little measles in the United States. So in the United States, in the here and now, the risk of getting vaccinated, the possibility that you'll have a bad outcome from the MMR vaccine, is tiny. The risk of not getting vaccinated, the possibility that you'll catch measles and have a bad outcome, is also tiny. Those are essentially equal risks. They're both so small that trying to say which one is bigger is silly. And the risk of driving to the doctor's office to get your MMR is bigger than either one. So those are both tiny risks. The reason the MMR is worth getting, at least vis-a-vis measles, the reason it's worth getting is because if lots of people don't get vaccinated, pretty soon there'll be a lot of measles around, and then the risk of not getting vaccinated will be much higher than the risk of getting vaccinated. So in the future tense, if we don't all get vaccinated, vaccination is wise. In the present tense, when almost everybody does get vaccinated, vaccination is a wash. It isn't obviously wise. That's what the data say. And that's not an example of where, if you tell the truth, you'll sell the good behavior anyway. I think most doctors are convinced, and I suspect they're right, that if you take a vaccine hesitant parent who's sitting in a pediatrician's office thinking, I don't know, I'm a little worried about vaccines, what do you think, doctor? And the doctor said, there's not a lot of measles around. I think the vaccine is really safe, but frankly, not getting vaccinated so far is also really safe. As long as most of your neighbors are vaccinated, your kid's not going to get measles, probably. If you're worried about the vaccine, I can't make a scientific case to get vaccinated until there's more measles around than there is now. That's the truth. A doctor who said that is not going to get to vaccinate that kid. If all doctors say that to all parents, pretty soon measles is going to be rife in the community, and we will wish we had all lied. That's the other case. Sometimes you can make a case that they're gilding the lily unnecessarily. Other times it looks like they're gilding the lily for a very good reason. And then the question, and this gets to, I'm long-windedly getting to where I think you wanted me to get to. Then the question is it worth it? Not ethics, because I'm not an ethicist. I'm not asking an ethical question. Is it worth it empirically? If in the short term you're going to save lives, but in the long term, you're going to risk the reputation of public health, are you making a bad gamble or a good gamble? And that's the hard question. The easy question is, you know, if you can convince them with what, without lying, should you lie? Obviously not. If you can convince them without lying, tell the truth. But what if telling the truth, telling the whole truth, being not just not lying, but not misleading, being totally candid, acknowledging the ways in which the other side is right? What if doing all of that won't sell the health innovation you're trying to sell, won't sell the health behavior you're trying to sell? What if people will die if you're completely candid? Should you let them die in order to preserve the credibility of public health for the next campaign and the one after that? Or should you always tell the truth? And if that means some campaigns are less effective, that's a price worth paying. Now, my opinion is the latter. I believe that the credibility of public health is at stake. I believe that people are learning not to trust. I mean, people already don't trust the government, but they're learning not to trust the arm of the government that does public health. They're learning to trust scientists less because scientists do this. They're learning to trust doctors less because doctors do this. My argument is that preserving your credibility, preserving trust, being trustworthy and being trusted and trusting the public, those things are so important that if sometimes telling the truth is less effective than being dishonest, that's a price worth paying. That's my opinion. I cannot prove it. I don't have good data. I have examples where I'm right. I have examples where I'm wrong. I can cherry pick a case that says dishonesty backfires. I can cherry pick a case that says dishonesty never backfires. It works in the short term and you get away with it in the long term too. I don't have any way of knowing which happens more often or under what circumstances one happens versus the other, except some obvious points. If there were more investigative reporters trying to catch public health people lying, I could make a much better case that dishonesty backfires.
So is there, I think I stopped you, I derailed you on the MMR, but is there an example that you saw like before this pandemic of public health doesn't seem to be trusting the public on this, and it actually did backfire, in even if it's in a small way?
Yeah, well, the most stunning recent example is the Dengvaxia vaccine in the Philippines. This is a vaccine that prevents dengue or reduces the frequency of dengue, and it's the only vaccine we have so far against dengue. And dengue is not a big deal in the continental United States, though it is in Puerto Rico, but it's a very big deal in the tropical world. An important sort of medical fact to know about dengue is you often get it several times. And the first case tends to be mild, but later cases are, particularly the second case, are much likelier to be severe. Now, it turns out that the Dengvaxia vaccine acts like it was the first case. So if you give it to people who have already had dengue, it does way more good than harm. It keeps them from getting dengue again. But if you give it to people who have never had dengue, it still makes them less likely to catch dengue. But if they do catch dengue, they've had their first case, in effect, by getting vaccinated. So instead of catching dengue and having a mild case, they tend to catch dengue and have a severe case. So getting vaccinated with this Dengvaxia vaccine is not a good idea medically, except for people who have already had dengue once. Those are the medical facts, okay? But when the Philippines was launching its Dengvaxia campaign, they weren't sure of that. They thought it was true, but it wasn't as proven as it is now, and they hid it. They tried not to vaccinate people who had never had dengue before by vaccinating only people, you know, older children. They didn't vaccinate younger children, figuring rightly that by the time you were 10 or 11, probably you will have had dengue already in the Philippines. But they didn't tell parents that this downside existed. They didn't do informed consent. They didn't say to parents, you know, probably your child has had dengue, and that means probably this vaccine will do your child more good than harm. But if your child is in the minority who hasn't had dengue, that hasn't had dengue, it might do more harm than good. And we don't have a good test to find out whether your child has had dengue that we can use on, you know, tens of millions of people. So which way do you want to gamble? They didn't do that because they judged that if they did that, people would, too many parents would say, I'm not going to vaccinate my child. So they simply vaccinated children without telling them, without telling parents about this downside of the vaccine. Now, the vaccine is still way better than not getting vaccinated. That is, you know, from a population standpoint, Dengvaxia saves many, many more lives than it kills, but it does kill some people. That's, you know, and they lied about that, or they withheld that information. And then the truth came out. And when the truth came out, the media overreacted, the public overreacted, the political party in power was not the same political party as the one that had been in power when the campaign was launched. And they started filing manslaughter charges against public health officials. And there was a huge furor about this deadly vaccine, remember the truth, it really is deadly for a tiny number of people, and it really saves a much larger number of lives than the number it kills. But they hid the downside, and they only talked about the upside. As a result, the Dengvaxia campaign had to be canceled, and you know, people are dying of dengue every year that this vaccine could have saved, because you know they can't possibly do a Dengvaxia campaign in the Philippines. But not only that, uptake of other vaccines has also declined. People are dying of measles and dying of malaria and dying of all kinds of other diseases that they might not have died of if they hadn't learned to mistrust the public health establishment in the Philippines because it lied to them about Dengvaxia.